Good morning, good evening, good afternoon. Wherever and whenever you're listening to this podcast, you are very welcome. Welcome to Rugby News, the podcast about our town and our people. We're going to kick off, as we like to do, with a roundup of local news. That's news local to rugby, with the help of the excellent local newspapers, the Rugby Observer and the Rugby Advertiser. In this week's show, podcast number 6, released on Friday the 13th of December, I'll share with you the local news from around Rugby Town, including the tragic murder of a Bulkington man famed throughout the classic car world, rail disruption over the holiday period, bins and card posting dates, and a review of A Christmas Carol. And then, in my weekly deep dive feature, I talk to the Chair of Trustees of Hope 4, Diana Mansell, and the Hope Centre Manager, A.D. Robinson, getting to understand how their work has transformed over 22 years to the stage where Hope 4 has recently been recognised with the King's Award for Voluntary Service. A fascinating chat. OK, so without further ado, here's our news. The death of a world-renowned Jaguar expert is being treated as murder. John Brown, 82, died in hospital on the 29th of November following an assault 6 days earlier at his home in Bulkington. His family said the grandfather was a true gentleman, a pillar of the community who founded the local car restoration specialist Leaping Cats. John's attention to detail, they say, his skill and his dedication to excellence earned him respect and admiration across the globe as he became a world-renowned figure in the Jaguar restoration industry. His legacy would live on, they said. Jacob Walpole, 32, of School Road, Bulkington, was alleged to have been involved in a second incident only days before at Bulkington Working Men's Club, police said. Before Mr. Brown's death, Walpole had been charged with grievous bodily harm with intent, assault occasioning actual bodily harm, possession of an offensive weapon, common assault by beating, and breach of a restraining order. But now, Detective Inspector Gareth Unnett said, what was an investigation into a serious assault has now sadly turned into a murder investigation. The defendant was remanded into custody ahead of a court appearance on the 23rd of December. Mr. Brown's family are being supported by specialist officers and urge the public to avoid speculation. Now, are you planning a rail journey over the Christmas period? Well, you better listen up. Avanti West Coast train managers have voted to strike for 3 days over Christmas. Around 300 train managers are expected to join the walkouts scheduled for the 22nd, 23rd and 29th of December after rejecting the train company's proposals for rest day working arrangements. Train managers usually work a 41-hour week, but due to staff shortages, they can often be asked to work on their off days. Their union, the RMT, have said these arrangements are unacceptable. Avanti West Coast said that, at one of our busiest and most important times of the year, our customers will now face significant disruption because of these strikes. We are disappointed the RMT have voted to decline the very reasonable offer made to them to resolve the rest day working dispute. That would have prevented the inconvenience to those many people who will be travelling on the West Coast mainline over this time. We will continue to work with the RMT to resolve the dispute. So, if you need more information, a revised timetable is going to be made available on Saturday the 14th December, but rail services are expected to be limited on all 3 days. Ouch! Best of luck with dealing with that. Wheelie bins! What's happening over Christmas? Well, here is the bin lowdown. Black-lid bins and blue-lid bins due to be collected on Christmas Day, a Wednesday, will be collected the Saturday before, on December the 21st. If they're due to be collected on Boxing Day, a Thursday, they'll be collected on Saturday after Christmas, on December the 28th. On every other day, including New Year's Day, collections will continue as normal. Bin men, heroes. They worked all through COVID, didn't they? Thank heavens. Collection of green bins will be suspended during the 2 weeks beginning December 23rd and December 30th. This allows crews to prioritise general rubbish and recycling collections over the busy festive season. A big thank you to our trusty bin men. We wish them a well-deserved break on Christmas Day and Boxing Day. Do you need a reminder about those Christmas card posting dates? Well, here they are. Royal Mail are promising these dates. Second class and second class signed for Wednesday the 18th December. First class and first class signed for Friday 20th December. Special delivery guaranteed Monday 23rd December. Tract 24, Saturday 21st December. Tract 48, Friday the 20th of December. Normal sized Christmas cards go second class for 85p and it's £2.55 if you want it signed for. Normal sized first class go for £1.65 and signed for £3.35. And if you only use Royal Mail at Christmas, be sure and use the modern ones with barcode on them. Ho ho, hope you get all your cards done in time. And ho, ho, hope Royal Mail deliver on their promises. See what I did there? I did that last week and it had the same reaction. I'll drop it then. If you're catching a cab this Christmas, just a couple of tips so you stay safe. You need to check whether the taxi and driver are properly licensed. On licensed taxis, on the outside, you should see a license plate attached to the rear of the vehicle, stating which council has licensed the cab, the license number, the vehicle registration, and the license's expiry date. Inside, there should be a badge on the taxi's dashboard or front windscreen, which should also display the same information. If you're hiring a private taxi, it must be booked in advance. They are not allowed to pick up fares on the street. Private hire taxi drivers who do pick up passengers on the street risk prosecution, and you, as the passenger, have no insurance in the event of an accident. Rugby's white Hackney carriage taxis pick up passengers from one of the town centre's taxi ranks, that's outside New Look, and by the clock tower, both on North Street and outside the railway station in Railway Terrace. And you can hail Hackney carriages on the street. Finally, drivers of all taxis must be licensed and should wear a photo ID badge. You really should ask the driver to show that ID before travelling to make sure everything is in order. Go safe, my friend. It was Small Business Saturday last week. Intending to throw the spotlight on rugby's independent shops just at the height of the festive shopping season. The Mayor, Simon Ward, John Slinger, our MP, and Rugby First Business Director Linda Lowne toured the town centre small businesses showing their support, and I hope it helped. It's an annual campaign sponsored, I think, by American Express, aiming to encourage consumers to shop local and support small businesses in their communities. Linda Lowne of Rugby First said, "We fully support the Small Business Saturday campaign, which raises awareness of the amazing range of independent small businesses in our town centre. All businesses, large and small, have faced tough challenges in recent years, especially on the high street, and the key message is that one small purchase can make a big difference to a small business, at Christmas and, importantly, throughout the year." Well, listener, I used to run a shop in town just about 10 years ago. Garden Gate Flowers, you may remember its short but magical life. It was a tough time then, especially when M&S left town for Elliot's Field, and boy, has it got tougher since. If you can get into town, check out the little independent diamonds still there and give them some love. A major new security upgrade in Rugby Town Centre is due soon to be completed with the aim of keeping people safer in Rugby Town Centre. The upgrades are underway for more and better CCTV cameras and lighting, all funded from an £820,000 Safer Streets grant awarded to Warwickshire's Police and Crime Commissioner for crime prevention projects all across the county. The Warwickshire's Safer Streets projects include training police officers to identify people with hostile intentions, an awareness campaign to combat violence against women and girls, and buying more crime prevention equipment. A Rugby Borough Council spokesman said this will, ultimately, make a real impact on criminal activity, including county lines drug trafficking, antisocial behaviour and violence against women and girls, which, as we know, all has such a negative impact on our communities. Well, best of luck with that. Keep us safe, please. A Christmas Carol, the classic Dickens ghost story, is coming to the end of its 10-show run at Rugby Theatre, the brilliant amateur theatre in Henry Street in the middle of town. It's been a collaboration with In the Round Theatre, a local independent youth theatre focused on actor training, founded by Rob Sloan and Darren Pratt, both rugby theatre veterans. Together, In the Round and Rugby Theatre has put on what people are calling a spectacular show, which was a sellout 3 weeks before the curtain up. Full houses, delighted every night. It also happens to be the show that's celebrating the 75th anniversary of rugby theatre itself. I'm a bit biased, because I have had the luck to be in the show, given a couple of small parts, so I need to be careful. But if you've seen it and you disagree with anything I'm saying, please, please get in touch. Rob Sloan wrote and, along with Darren, directed this new adaptation of Dickens' classic. It's underpinned by a musical score that makes it almost filmic, all original compositions from James Brady and Joe Foote. In the Round provided 11 of their youthful actors as narrators of the tale, on stage all the way through without a break, leading the audience along the familiar path of the story. And from where I stand, mostly in the wings, they worked so hard, acting their socks off, heightening, exploring and bringing out the drama. Reviews have praised Andy McCallum, who plays Scrooge, as a magnificent choice at the heart of this compelling take on the classic tale. The rest of the cast are brilliant too, I would have to say that, wouldn't I? The set is innovative, the sound excellent, the costumes, lighting, props, makeup so clever in support of the story, special effects astonishing. It is another example of our amazing town, showing that when people get together to work on and develop something with energy and cooperation, this town delivers in spades. All involved are amateurs, all living in and near rugby, all giving themselves to it for free, for the love. Well, well done In the Round Theatre, well done and happy birthday Rugby Theatre, and of course, well done rugby. You are listening to the Rugby News Podcast, where I draw together the biggest stories from the last week from Rugby Town and all around, so you can hear them at your convenience for free every Friday and with no distracting ads, all in about 20 minutes. You can listen when you're walking the dog, driving to work, or finishing off the ironing. If you like what you hear, give it a like. Follow me or subscribe on your usual podcast station and tell your friends. Spread the word. If you like it, they'll like it too. That was the week of local Rugby Town news, and I am indebted to the excellent local papers, the Rugby Observer and the Rugby Advertiser, for all their help. For more detail and for more stories as they happen, go to their websites or follow them on their Facebook pages. Now, every week in the Rugby News Podcast, I take my trusty mic and I visit interesting places and chat with interesting people from around the town, people who are making a difference, adding to the uniqueness of this extraordinary place. This week, I went to find out about Hope 4. It was the 2nd of December 2024, and I found myself at the Hope Centre at the top of Newbold Road, pretty much next door to the Ben Hall. Having heard that Hope 4 had been honoured with the King's Award for Voluntary Service, I wanted to find out more about them. I met Diana Mansell, Chair of the Trustees for Hope 4, and also A.D. Robinson, directly responsible for the Hope Centre and the Food Bank. And I asked, of course, how they felt about the award.
We were thrilled to receive the award. It's a real honour for our organisation to be recognised, really. So we were thrilled to be nominated. About a year ago, I think it was, that we were nominated. And then we got through to the second round and they came and spent a day with us, a couple of people from the Lord Lieutenant's office. And they were overwhelmed with what we did and came away with lots of questions that we then had to answer in greater depth. Six organisations from across the county were put forward and we were one of two that actually received the award. So it was an honour to be nominated and to go through to the pool in London, but to receive the award is a great tribute to all our volunteers, past and present.
And recognition means a lot, doesn't it?
Yes, it does, absolutely. It is like a kite mark. It's that endorsement of a standard that actually represents trust, reliability, you know, and that's a key thing that, you know, we're trusted with donors' donations, whether it be financial or goods. You know, we're trusted to receive referrals from people because they know that they'll be supported. Mm-hmm. So it gives us that great kudos that will support us in other funding bids as well, to know that we've got that sort of an MBE equivalent in a King's Honour.
Diana told me that the aim of Hope 4 is to end homelessness and food poverty one person at a time in Rugby. That is a massive aspiration. Their beginnings, though, were much more humble.
So Hope 4 began as a soup kitchen back in about 2003. The churches around the town, particularly St Matthew's, decided that they wanted to reach out to people who were on their own or on the street homeless or sofa surfing, and started a soup kitchen in the porch of St Andrew's three nights a week for about an hour and a half, and then realised there was actually more need. So they decided to open the Hope Centre in Church Street, and we rented a space above some shops. So it was 7 days a week over lunchtime, providing support for people who were homeless, street homeless, sofa surfing, in temporary accommodation, trying to help to get them back into employment, into more permanent accommodation, providing showers and food and social space in the warmth.
So they were moving from crisis response with the soup kitchens to ongoing support of each individual to help them make changes in their own circumstances. Well, they couldn't do that on their own. They needed to build links with others.
One of the things, or the restrictions from Hope 4, is that we don't have accommodation. So we really rely on those relationships with those accommodation providers, including local authority and other social housing providers. We do explore all options. It's not that a homeless person has to go down one particular route. We open up all routes and explore all routes for them that might be best tailored for themselves. There is stock available out there. The challenge is it being affordable and also being of suitable accommodation, something where you would be happy to call home.
I wondered how they measured success.
It's loose terms because we don't necessarily know how many is going to come through the door, who's going to face homelessness this month, next month, this year, etc. But we have seen a steady trajectory, unfortunately, it's an increased trajectory of numbers coming through our doors. In the last financial year, 23-24, we worked with 195 individuals. And the year before, we were around 160 individuals. So we have seen a steady increase.
So the numbers are rising and each new case presents new challenges.
And some of the complexities also change. Where homelessness itself as its own label is enough for many people. But when you actually have another label on top of substance misuse, alcohol dependency, unemployment, and all those layers on top of homelessness as well, then we could be working with some quite complex individuals.
So that's more partners that you work with, I guess, people who help in counselling and support.
Yes, we operate here at the Hope Centre is much more like a hub and spoke model, where we're the hub, And then we bring in partner agencies. So we have DWP come in on a weekly basis, so the job centre team, so they work with people with their universal credit claims. We've got health provision, physical health provision from the NHS. We've got a physical health nurse that works from here 2 days a week. We have sexual health clinic workers come in. And we also employ on a contract a mental health practitioner as well that is funded this for the next couple of years through our lottery fund.
In addition to dealing with a rising number of more complex cases of homelessness, Hope4, of course, provides another valuable service.
Yeah, part of the work of Hope4 is Rugby Food Bank, and we started Rugby Food Bank in 2012. So in the last year, we've provided, the last financial year, over 7,000 food parcels and gave out nearly 2 tonnes of food a week across Rugby, and most of that has been donated by the public.
2 tonnes a week?
Yeah, 2 tonnes a week of packets, tins, dried food. It's all ambient stuff. But it's for people who are in an emergency crisis, juggling which bill should I pay, just lost their job, signing on. You know, there's different reasons why people come to the food bank. But we also are trying to work upstream now to look at why people are ending up in the food bank and in crisis.
So again, having started with a response to the crisis for individuals and families in the borough having no food, Hope4 is now trying to establish the causes of the problem. Again, building links with others.
So we have a fantastic relationship with the local Citizens Advice Bureau, and with some funding from Trussell Trust, we're part of the Trussell Trust network of food banks. We have funded 1.5 Citizens Advice workers to work solely with people that come to food bank. So whilst they come to get food, we're also then able to offer them support to look at various issues, debt, are they on the right benefits? Have they been turned down for a PIP application? Let's redo the PIP application. All sorts of issues that go on behind the scenes that contribute to people's crises and ending up in a food bank. So whilst food is the reason why people come, they're able to get much more help. And we have other agencies that come in as well. So Family Information Service, Christians Against Poverty, Mind, various other ones. So again, a bit like the Hope Centre, we're trying to be a hub for people who come in because of one thing. They think they're coming for one thing, which is the food and really, really needed, but they get a lot more support. So in the last year, with the work that Citizens of ICE have been able to do with the clients that we've sent through to them, they have been able to say that if they apply for everything and get everything that they think these clients are entitled to, it'd be about £1 million worth of extra money in people's pockets in Rugby. And that makes the difference between needing a food bank and not needing a food bank.
They've also found that there is a clear issue with the benefits system and specifically universal credit.
And it was some research that was done by the Joseph Rowntree Foundation to realise actually the cost of living versus the benefit payments through universal credit doesn't match. There is a shortfall each month, which then obviously drives people to use food banks and explore other ways to increase income, including gambling, because people are thinking that they can win some money, but they're robbing it from one pot to another.
And it's not just those dependent on the benefit system. People in employment are facing hunger too.
You know, one comment in there is a lady that works in the NHS, her husband works in retail, and yet they're having to come to food bank. And that's just everyday people. Food banks historically were around dependent people. But what we're also now seeing is, sadly, people who are working individuals and working families are having to come to food bank. Just maybe at the end of the month, they just haven't got enough to get them over the line for, you know, to pay the bills, to put food on the table. To, you know, we often see a little spike in September with school uniform bills and things like that. All those sorts of little things can just make the difference of actually being able to put food on the table.
So there are problems at the national level, and the fight there is being championed by the Joseph Rowntree Foundation in their Guarantee Our Essentials campaign.
We've also got some evidence to suggest it can be achievable. If you remember back to the days of COVID, and we saw an uplift on the universal credit payments to everybody. During that period, we saw a decrease in people using food banks. If we were able to actually bring up the rate of universal credit in line with everyday living and guarantee the essentials, then that should naturally see a decline in users of food bank, which actually is all a step towards the day when we're not needed.
I think it's a difficult thing to say there will never be a need. There's always an emergency. People's circumstances change. This government would like to end the need for food banks and have said that in their manifesto. So we are working closely with our new local MP. He came in recently and we said we would keep him up to date with trends. Are we going to see more people coming to the food bank? Because of the winter fuel allowance being taken away with pensioners, we don't get a lot of pensioners, but it's something we're going to keep an eye on. But winter is an expensive time, you know, bills are expensive. It will put strain on people's pockets, let alone Christmas. Mm-hmm. So we will be here until we're not needed.
So for the time being, the work goes on at some cost, it seems.
It costs about £550 a day to keep the Hope Centre going. The food bank is about £250 a day. We are partly lottery funded for the Hope Centre, but that will decrease in the next year by £26,000. So to stand still, we have to fundraise that, plus the hike in national insurance.
If they're going to be able to carry on the brilliant work that they do, they're going to have to meet ongoing increasing costs and reductions in the funding from the lottery. They've got some imaginative ideas, though, for you to think about to help them raise those crucial funds.
So we are looking to get 4,000 people to donate £4 a month. And that's regular giving that we can count upon. Mm. And we're at about, I think, 1,800 of those 4,000 at the moment. We've got a sleep out coming out the last Friday in February, sleep out to help out. We have volunteers that will come in and they will sleep in the car park just next to the Hope Centre, in sleeping bags or tents, under tarpaulin, raise money and awareness of what it's like to stay out. It's very unnerving, but a real eye-opener to anybody who doesn't realise how vulnerable you can feel sleeping out rough.
Is there breakfast?
There is breakfast. So, yeah, one of our team members comes in and always cooks bacon sandwiches. Under 18s can come so long as they're with an adult. And then we've got the London Landmarks Half Marathon, where we've invested money to buy 15 charity places. Some runners already signed up, and we're looking for some more. And the Sleep Out and the London Landmarks brought in over £20,000 last year, so it was amazing.
That's ways that you can help them raise money to meet the £800 or so pounds that it costs per day to run the Hope Centre and the food banks. And if you can donate food for the food bank or items for the Hope Centre?
There's a number of ways for the food bank to make donations. So we have collection baskets in Tesco's, Asda and Sainsbury's and some of the co-ops. So you can drop off items there, whether you buy them in those stores or other stores, you can drop them off and we collect twice a week from there. And also you can drop off at our warehouse, which is right next door to the Ben Hall. To the left of the Ben Hall every morning in the week, 9:30 till 12:30.
In terms of the Hope Centre, we've got our 12 Days of Christmas campaign, which is those items that we can put into goodie bags for our homeless clients, which is like fresh underwear, toiletries, all those sorts of little gifts that we often take for granted. And for many, that Christmas bag that we issue out before Christmas is probably their only Christmas gift they'll get.
And for the Hope Centre, drop off at the Hope Centre, again, during the working day. So, say, from 9 till 2, Monday to Friday.
Wow, that is a fascinating story of how a response 22 years ago to a crisis with 3 days a week soup kitchens has developed into a holistic approach to support each individual in this town who is, or may soon be, homeless or is in food poverty, onto and along a pathway tailored to their own needs towards a more secure and sustainable place in their lives. Last year, helping nearly 200 homeless individuals while handing out 2 tons of food a week and accessing through partnerships with, for instance, the Citizens Advice Bureau, opportunities to find £1 million worth of support. Without Hope 4, who knows how much of that can have happened? Once again, people in Rugby reaching out to partners and working together to make something amazing happen. In Rugby, when we do that, just look at what we can do. Congratulations once again to Hope for being recognised with the King's Award for Voluntary Service, and to you, dear listener, for getting online to Hope for, that's the digit for, hopefor.org.uk, and helping them to end food poverty and homelessness one person at a time in Rugby. Go on, do it now. Well, that's it from me, Simon, for Rugby News. See you next time. Goodbye. Okay, we've pretty much reached the end of this podcast, and thank you so much for staying with it. I'm aiming to publish a new one once a week, out on Thursday or Friday, ready for the weekend. Over time, I'm thinking it would be interesting to add an entertainment guide, sort of what's on in and around the town in the next fortnight. Would that be interesting? And also, I want to bring to a wider audience some of the hidden histories of this extraordinary town that are truly amazing, showing how Rugby Town has influenced and changed the world. I hope you liked what you heard, found it useful, and you want more. And if you did, thank you. Please like it. Please subscribe. And if you have ideas about how it can be better, where it could be improved, do let me know in the comments. Or you could email me, simon.rugby.news@gmail.com. OK, thanks again for listening. Catch up with you next week. Goodbye.